You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, that we bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it. People who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that goes on there. I'm your host, Joe Epley, and I'm excited to dive back into part two of a conversation with Mike Clarensaw. He is a man who's worn many hats, from educator to statistician to rural practitioner to all sorts of great things, and I'm excited to dive into this second part of the conversation, talk a lot about leadership styles and what it means to grow a healthy church. And so we invite you to tune into part two, and we're glad you're back with us. I love that you didn't dial in on one particular model to replace Sunday school. I love that you said, hey, here's the arenas we have to engage, and here's kind of the challenge in front of us. Because I do think, if nothing else, the rural church is inherently creative, often born of necessity, but it's, you know, it's what can you do to see those missions come to pass? Well, let's talk about this. We're going to dive probably into, so again, we're just passing around your different hats as pastor and leader and academic dean and all these things. So these last two questions, the first one I think is going to dive into your time as kind of this church health director, even as you continue to work with churches. So here's the thing. I love the introspective process of analyzing like personal spiritual health, church health. Like it is a huge passion of mine. But a lot of people, a lot of pastors even, wake up and go, okay, cool, I should probably figure out if my church is healthy, but what does that even mean? Where do I start? How do I approach it the right way? What am I looking for? How do I keep this from just being a critique on my church? And especially, I would say, in a small town setting, there's that high relational value. So, you know, in a larger context, you might say, oh, I'm critiquing the kids' ministry because it needs to grow. In a small town, you might say that and your volunteer kids minister is going to quit because they're like, oh, you don't like what I'm doing, mm-hmm. You know? And so you've got this kind of, you know, environment where it's like, hey, we need to be analyzing for healthy or not. And so how does a pastor, like maybe give us some common metrics, help us start the conversation. How does a pastor begin the journey of assessing and then doing something about the health of their church?
Yeah, great question. And I really kind of want to take maybe two approaches to it. Before we talk anything about numbers and metrics, there are four dominant contributors to Spirit-empowered church health. I'm talking about us Pentecostal churches. Sure. We've done the research on this, and these four, I mean, there's a lot of factors, but these four stand head and shoulders above all the rest.
Number one,
I already alluded to, is outward focus. Are we engaging our community? We found that every step we take outside our walls is an almost equivalent step toward greater church health. There's a 0.97 correlation, meaning almost a full step. I mean, there's nothing you can do to get your church healthier than taking a step out of outward focus. And so getting out in that community, connecting with people, being involved in your town and what's going on in your town, you know, not just having church events, but, you know, engaging what's happening. That's number one. Number two is, do we manage conflict well? That's, in fact, I can tell you, if we come into about any church and we ask the people, is this a healthy church? The first thing they're going to think of is whether or not there's unresolved conflict.
Yeah. Do we fight fair?
Do we deal with our stuff? You know, do we get along? You know, that's what they're thinking. So that's number two. Number three is, am I inspired or engaged as we gather for worship? You know, it's not necessarily the quality of anybody's performance, but do we sense the power of the Holy Spirit here? Do we feel we are gathering and it matters, you know, and it matters to my life? That's number three. So an inspiring worship environment. Number four is, in a healthy, Spirit-empowered church, individual believers believe that God has a mission for them.
Oh, sure.
They have a personal
sense of calling. Yeah.
They may not know exactly, but they know what God wants to use them. And so, big picture, those four things are going to be the greatest contributors to the healthier church. Now, when you get into, thinking about metrics, I mentioned that, metrics really are asking the question, what are we doing with what we've got? And so one of the things that I would want to look at with a pastor is asking the question, when we look at the number of people that we led to Jesus last year as a church, the number of people that we would count as a conversion, maybe reported it on our reporting, our ACMR or whatever, compare that number to our average attendance. Basically, what that number says is how many of us did it take to lead somebody to Jesus last year? And
Whoa.
so that's what you're looking at. Very simple number, very simple math. Take your total average attendance, divide it by your conversions. And so if you've got 50 people that attend on a regular basis and you saw five people come to Jesus last year, that's 10 of us for every person, 10 to 1.
Wow.
And look at that number. And we know that for the long-term health of the church, we want to see that number, or that ratio rather, get down to around 5 to 1. That means we're reaching people at a rate that will sustain our congregation and help us to be healthy. And so that's what I mentioned earlier, the struggles of the rural church and connecting with new people. Oftentimes in a rural setting, that number is more like 7 or 8 to 1. And 5 to 1 is where we want to get to be healthy. And so that's one metric. Another metric to think about when we look at the folks that came to Christ last year, we look at how many conversions we had. How many water baptisms did we have that year? Because the relationship between the two kind of tells us, are we holding on to our new believers long enough to get them in the water?
Sure.
And that's giving us a clue as to how we're doing at holding on to everybody. Because
Yeah.
if we're not holding on to the people that are responding to our message, we may not be doing a lot better with those that aren't haven't responded. Or,
Sure.
that's a good metric. Another one is to compare those conversions or our conversion total to spirit baptisms in a year. As answers the question, are we effectively discipling people? Are they getting to that place, that step where they then also experience spirit baptism? And that measure also tells us whether or not we're mobilizing our spirit baptized people toward the harvest field. Are we reaching people? Because I've been to a few churches where just about everyone speaks in tongues, but they haven't reached anybody in a year and a half. And
Yeah.
that's not acceptable. Obviously, we're missing the point of that, the outpouring of that power, when we are not engaging the mission. And so, comparing, you look at your small group number, as a percentage of your attendance, how are we doing with that? Where's our percentage? Because in a medium or smaller sized church, that number can and probably should get pretty close to 50% or better.
Right. You would
Other
hope
than that,
so.
what's the percentage of folks volunteering? How many are serving out of our? So what you're doing is you're comparing a couple of numbers along the way, in each one of these, asking the question, what are we doing with what we've got? Don't worry about the raw totals. Okay, those have their place, but we can sit in a rural setting and say, well, such and such church reported 250 people saved on Easter Sunday. And we're like, that could never be us. We don't have that many people in 5 Sundays. Attend our church, much less come to Christ. Get away from all that. Metrics are beautiful because they level the playing field of evaluation, and they let you value what God's doing in your house. And that's what I have seen in so many of these, is reasons to celebrate the things that are happening in smaller churches and in rural churches. These things need to be celebrated. That Jesus rejoices over every single one. And we know that, but sometimes we get hung up in maybe a man-made idea that, or a baby boomer, bigger is better mentality,
Sure.
that drives our culture. But no, every one of these lives matter greatly. And so, metrics also give you more reason to celebrate. So I would work with some things like that. One metric I would encourage you, look at how many people have gone out in full-time ministry from your church in the last 10 years. If you're a church where you simply have a pastor on staff, you don't have other staff members, but you've produced three, kingdom workers in the last 10 years, then you've obviously contributed enormously to the harvest field. You're producing more kingdom workers than your congregation is requiring to use. And that's a great metric, something to look at. And I know from my many years in our fellowship, overwhelmingly, the missionary force we have today, pastors all over the globe, so many, very, very high, well over half, indicate significant influence of the rural church in their ministry journey. The rural church has been producing kingdom servants for decades. And so the more you look at these things, the more you find reasons to celebrate, or you get the heads up that, hey, maybe we need a little more focus here. We need to put some more energy here.
Yeah, and I really love something's just coming to my mind as you talk. This idea of metrics is nice because I don't even think, in some ways, step one of this conversation is not, am I healthy or am I unhealthy? It's just, I want the certainty that comes from knowing where I'm at. And I think that deep down, I'm not near as afraid of being unhealthy as I am just not knowing what that means. You know, because if I know that I'm unhealthy, if I have, like you said, five metrics to look at to go, how are our salvations and how are our baptisms and how are these different things? How are we doing with this ratio of outward focus? How are we doing with these big picture things? That at least gives me certainty. And I think certainty is an incredible gift to give somebody to say, hey, here's areas where you're excelling, here's areas where you're not. Because again, you're right, it levels the playing field. And it even takes a lot of the personality out of it, where I'm not worried about individual performance of any one person or one minister or one lay leader. I'm just looking, going, okay, well, guys, these are guidelines for how to help us as a team, how to help us as a church figure out where we need to go and where we need to. And even if you just did one of these a year, even if you as a rural church said, you know what? This year, we're going to try and get to that 5-to-1 ratio of reaching people for Jesus and water baptizing them. Like, that is huge, you know? Or even if it was just, hey, let's look back. And I mean, because even trying to change culture, you know, I can think of a rural pastor trying to celebrate. If you had a story of here's all the ministers that we've sent out to work the harvest fields over the past decade, you could
Oh, man.
create a huge wave of momentum in your church and multiply your efforts just by doing that celebration of a metric that you maybe are aware of for the first time. So yeah, this is a really cool, I like this concept.
Well, and one thing I just add real quick is, church health works a lot like physical health in the sense that one measure doesn't get the job done.
Sure.
When I go to my doctor, she's going to do a lot of things, going to measure a lot of things, going to take my weight, my height, she's going to do my blood pressure, she's going to measure my cholesterol, all of that. And some of those are clicking along just fine. But when she finds one that's not where it needs to be, then that's what we work on. And so in kind of a similar way with church health, we're going to find certain metrics where, hey, we're right on target, or this is going really well. We celebrate that, want to maximize that. But when we find something that's not, it doesn't mean our church isn't healthy. It just means that for us to be healthier, we need to tackle, like you said, we need to look at that one maybe and see what we can do to bring that more. The largest, most we would think of most resourced, extraordinary church in America struggles in certain metrics.
Yeah.
That's just reality, and we all have something we can work on in order to be healthier and more effective in ministry. So that, yeah, that's a big part of, just recognizing it's not just one number that's going to tell the story for us.
Yeah, what a fun conversation. I think it helps that this is definitely a passion of mine as well, but I am just really enjoying this. But we have one more hat to make
Okay.
you put on. Let's talk about kind of, you know, you've had all these roles in teaching and shaping ministers and shaping people and all these things, but let's talk a little bit about leadership. That'll probably be where we kind of park the bus for the remainder of this conversation. But I guess my last main question is, let's have a conversation about leadership style. I think you and I have both recognized that oftentimes in what we might call a mega church or an urban setting where there's high population, just due to maybe the pool of potential leaders, the pool that you're drawing from, you end up with, and again, I'm about to paint with a broad brush, which I hate painting with a broad brush, but there is a certain mold of what we think of when we think of a contemporary, like, mega church pastor. The way they preach, the way they relate, the way that they lead, the kind of proverbs that guide them, the people they take cues from. And we think of a certain personality. We think of a certain style. We think of a certain bend towards maybe extroversion, or we tend to, you know, we think of all these, this charisma. But in a rural church, I would say, and again, that's a broad brush. There are churches of all styles, of all sizes, with different leaders. But for the sake of this conversation, I think that we are so used to this perceived single personality and leadership that oftentimes we might have rural pastors struggling because they're measuring themselves against a standard that's not going to help them be effective. You know, again, it's the classic Einstein argument of like, if you measure the fish by his ability to climb a tree, he'll look like an idiot, you know, and it's just not what the fish was designed to be. And so, why don't you walk us through? I know in our phone call, you mentioned these four different types of leadership styles, how they all can show up and be a blessing to the rural church. So let's just, I would love to hear about that just for our listeners. Let's talk through that.
Well, you're highlighting something that I love talking about because pastoring breaks the mold. We many times when we look at study different leadership styles, things like that, as you alluded to, we can identify, maybe a certain personality type that's a good fit for this job. Like somebody's going to be an accountant. Well, we kind of know what that person should look like, or how they're made up, or they're going to be a car salesman. We got a picture of that. Pastors break the mold. Every single style of leadership development, every reality is present and can be successful in the role of pastor. And so I've done a fair amount of research into this, looking at leadership styles and really identified, four dominant leadership styles that we see in the main in life. And all four of them can be and have been effective in local church ministry, but they are radically different. So you have leaders that are what we'd call maybe a strategic leader. Maybe this is
Okay.
a task-oriented leader that's aggressive, good strategy. You kind of alluded to some of these might be pastoring mega churches, whatever. They build networks, they do all this stuff, and they lead a certain way. The strategic leader, many times driven by vision, that's they're a vision-based leader, and their strength is in that boardroom. They're in the boardroom, and that's where they really shine. You have motivational leaders. These are the guys that rally troops. They raise an army to get things done. Motivational leaders are people-focused, aggressive leaders. They see a hill, hey, let's go get it. And they get everything done through people, and they are typically phenomenal on the platform. That's where their wheelhouse is. That's their moment, really to shine and greater effectiveness. And they're also vision-based leaders, but those two categories of strategic and motivational leaders make up only about 20% of pastors. Only about 20%. The other 80% typically are either one, we call them a relational leader. A relational leader who leads primarily through the impact of their relationship with you. They're wonderful people. The closer you get to them, the more you like them, the more you want to be around them. Relational leaders may not reach wide, but they go deep. And their ideal venue, if you will, is the restaurant booth. I mean, when we sit down over a cup of coffee, these are people that impact your life, and they're making disciples, many of them one at a time, or people are just drawn to them. And so, today we've kind of got this thing in certain parts of the church where we think, well, this pastor, we'll just have him do pastoral care. No. Relational leaders still need to be in the main chair too. And that's very important. So, that pastor, a high percentage of pastors today are actually relational leaders, and they tend to be values driven. They're not vision driven, they're values driven. They function out of a heart for people, not necessarily out of a hill to climb. And so they're more motivated internally. And then the fourth kind is what I labeled an ethical leader, an ethical based leader. They do.
Because the other three are unethical,
Well,
right? That's the contrast.
didn't intend that.
I'm allowed to cut corners if I'm the other three types of leaders.
Didn't intend
I'm just
to do
kidding.
that. But no, the ethical leader is one who does something because it's right. They can be cause oriented. Hey, we're going to deal with human trafficking. We're going to respond to this need in our community. We're going to do. They are motivated by the cause, by the sense of rightness and righteousness. And these leaders, they hold us together. They keep us, pursuing righteousness. And so many leaders are this kind of leader. And, oftentimes they're great teachers. In fact, their environment often is in front of the chalkboard or the marker board. They really thrive unpacking, the scriptures in a certain area. And again, these are not categories that you just draw easy lines between them. They're
Right. It's not hard and fast because obviously there are very charismatic people who can grab a whiteboard and vice versa.
Absolutely.
I mean, you get the whole thing.
Yeah, they do. But there is one style that tends to dominate that particular leader. And what's fascinating to me, and we kind of touched it briefly in our pre-call, but what fascinates me is that in the last, oh, probably 70 to 80 years, one of these styles has been the primary thing you think of when you think of the word pastor. If you go back to the 1950s and before, you're thinking about that relational leader. Because the church world was smaller congregations in parish type structures. Pastor was the guy you knew, you spent time with, you went fishing with, past that relationship. And so when you said pastor, you were thinking local church shepherd with
Yeah,
the
hospital visits, graveside services,
Yeah,
weddings,
absolutely.
graduations, the living of life with people.
Yeah, this person that knows my family, that, is connected. And then we got into the 60s and all that chaos culturally, and the ethical-based pastor kind of rose to the forefront. And then, so pastor became the moral voice of the community. And we saw that. Then we got into the 80s when the baby boomers kind of took over culture. Bigger is better. And suddenly the motivational pastor and the larger church began to be in vogue. And you begin to think of pastor in those days kind of as face of the franchise, if you will, or, that leader that's up front. And then more recently, we've seen it shift more to the strategic style pastor. When we say pastor, what you just talked about in the intro to this question, we see that individual who is moving the chess pieces, and organizing and building structures and all that. And my firm belief is that the day will come again where we'll cycle back and we'll do that all over again, where relational pastor will emerge again as the dominant.
Well, and I would even argue that, like, obviously, a lot of my work now is in the next gen sphere. And I would argue that 9 times out of 10, the conversations I'm having with an incoming pastor in their 20s, early 30s, is, man, sometimes our strategic approach feels cold, feels forced, feels contrived, whatever it is. But there's a hearkening back towards, man, we're even a romanticism towards the idea of, like, can't we just connect with people well, know and be known? Do those things, and it's funny. It's funny how much that is just cycling back through where there's maybe the recognition that we've swung one pendulum and so we swing it again and again and again. So yeah, I love this conversation. What a fun trend.
What's funny. If I could just throw this in, is what's funny. A couple of years ago, I was grading a paper from one of my students, and we were talking about, their sense of, who they are. And this student wrote, "I don't know that I could, this assessment said I should be a pastor. I don't think I could be a pastor. All I want to do is love people and disciple them,
That's
and
so
there's,
weird.
obviously perceiving pastor as, something different, and the student was from a very large setting, and so their impression of pastor was somebody who could handle
Yeah, the
that,
stage, the
that size
CEO, that whole
crowd
thing,
and yeah, do all that. Yeah, it's like, whoa, seriously, the very definition of pastor is somebody who loves. So yeah, that's why I really believe, because of the creativity of the Holy Spirit, because of times and seasons, and because the role of pastor is made for any leadership style, I really don't believe that we will ever stick with one of these dominating forever. The strengths of one for a while will rise. You mentioned the intimacy, the authenticity, the desire of younger folks rising today. Yeah, that's going to drive us to that relational pastor priority again. But at every moment in time, all four have a place in the church, and all four can be effective in leadership. And so, rural pastors, I would say in your setting, be who you are. You are whatever style you lean toward, that's the style God knows your church needs right now. That's why you're there. And the day will come maybe when the Lord moves you to a different setting and another style may be raised up because that's the priority for the moment. Don't get hung up on ever trying to be somebody you're not. Be the person that you are because God's called you there on purpose and He wants you there. I had a good friend say that to me when I became DYD. Don't try to be your predecessor. God wants your gifts in ministry in this role for right now. And that's really the truth in every local church.
Wow. Well, this has been a truly insightful conversation. Doctor, Pastor Mike, I just wanted to say thank you for being on the podcast today.
Well, my privilege. I've enjoyed it very much. And I spend my time, working with pastors. If I can help somebody, I'm very glad to connect with them.
Awesome. Well, from all of us at Rural Advancement, we just want to thank you again for tuning in. We hope that you walk away from these conversations encouraged and inspired. Again, it is our hope that you feel like we're not just speaking to the rural church, but are speaking from a place of understanding, of recognizing the needs and the pressures that you feel in your context, with a strong desire to help. If you want to leave us a review on Apple Podcast or on Spotify, you can definitely do that. We always appreciate it. You can check out these podcasts on ruraladvancement.com. Or in true rural fashion, the best way for this podcast to spread is for one leader to look at another and say, hey, there's a set of conversations I think you'll really get a lot out of. But for this week, I've been your host, Joe Epley. He has been Mike Clarenshaw, and we will see you next week.